Residence 104.4 FM in London, the West End, with the truth about markets with Max and Stacy for the next 1 hour. We're going to be talking about the truth about markets. You know, the theme we've been talking about the last few weeks is the squeeze of the middle class. Now, to put this into historical perspective, you got to go back to the 1400 period, the Black Plague, which we're going to be talking about again shortly. But the Black Plague and the wipeout of huge population in Europe gave rise to bargaining power for the remaining stooges that were left, that were not part of the feudal class, to actually negotiate for wages, you see. This was the beginning of the middle class. And the middle class has been struggling ever since. And in America, they created this middle class dream, the America dream, as it's called, where every schlub with a dollar and a donut can make it to the top echelons of the billionaire status. All you got to do is commit ecological genocide, and all you got to do is get Goldman Sachs to come in there and rip people off for you as your hired financial terrorist gun. Anyone can do that in America. It's the American dream. Yeah. But anyway, the action going on now is back to the mean, regression to the mean, as they say in mathematics and economics. Yes, the middle class is getting squeezed. In particular, due to the recent bout of globalization that has taken place, really getting on in earnest since the early 1960s with the Indonesia phenomenon of America putting in a puppet regime over in Indonesia with the help of Britain and other countries to create slave labor, modern slave labor, which is, of course, feudalism, slave labor, the untouchable class, bankrupting an entire society for the benefit of a few fat, obese tyrants in America and Britain. I'm talking about you, the population. We already know that the leaders and the politicians are corrupt, but we also know now that millions and millions of people who are in the middle got to be corrupt, of course. But the globalization period has ushered in a new phenomenon in the last 10, 15 years where those at the very top don't like the fact that there are 14 million millionaires between America. If you add up the millionaires in America and then in Europe, there are 14 million millionaires. And the people who are the 100 millionaire and billionaire class don't like that. They don't like the competition. They don't like sharing, do they? So they've been squeezing, and they've been squeezing hard in the last 15 years. With the help of Goldman Sachs and the big banks. And, you know, you got guys like Philip Green here in the UK, runs Arcadia Group or Top Shops. He doesn't want to be a mere millionaire. Of course, he needs to be a billionaire, which would require taking a loan out in the name of the company of £1 billion and paying himself a £1 billion dividend in his wife's name in Monaco and not paying taxes and loading that debt up onto the balance sheet of the company. So now if interest rates go up, as of course they will do, as they are doing now, the company's a threat. Everyone working at the company's a threat. But Philip Green has already made out with his money. And you see that played out over and over again. And the reason I bring this up is because what we're seeing in the world now is the triumph of the armed wing of the middle class, Hezbollah, in the Mideast, which is nothing more than a reflection of a violent armed wing of the squeezed middle class, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, Hamas. These people are the armed wing of an extremely stressed out middle class that is responding to Israel, Britain, America, squeezing their balls, economically squeezing their balls, environmentally committing eco-genocide. I mean, what is this push from Israel into Lebanon but a push to get to the Litani River and get to the water? Because Israel's soiled, they've soiled their diapers, haven't they? They've turned their own water supplies and access to water into crap. So they go into Lebanon to get the Litani River, and they crap all over the Mediterranean in Lebanon and Syria to totally foul the coastline there, thanks to Israel, thanks to the greedy Israelis who decide, no, we want to own the world. You can't have anything, blah, blah, blah. So the violence is escalating, and you've got situations in the Britain, of course, 7-7, another done by middle-class guys. We got the videotape. These are guys in Lacoste shirts getting onto the bus. 9/11, they got an Armani suit practically, you know, driving the plane into the towers. These are not poor guys. These are middle class guys who've had it. They've had enough. They're fed up. They don't want it no more. So, yeah, I mean, this is, of course, growing in New Orleans in America. The hurricanes came in thanks to global warming, thanks to the policies of the Bush administration and the corporate elite who never met a planet they wouldn't trash for a nickel. And the people down there are quite upset. The violence is escalating in towns like Houston due to the New Orleans population, the immigrant population caused by global warming and climate change, caused by corporate racketeering, corporate war profiteering, corporate war mongering, media war mongering, resulting in hundreds of millions of climate refugees, which are putting pressure in the world's resources, the resources that are left. And of course, you can end up with violent extremist responses. I mean, this is just when you fill try to fill a balloon with lots of air, too much air, it's going to pop, isn't it? I mean, this is what you would think would be the obvious observation of leaders in the UK, Tony Blair, David Cameron, and that the way to make Britain safer is to address the wealth and income gaps that are being engineered by your local bankers here at HSBC, Barclays Bank, with the help of Goldman Sachs, private equity groups from America coming in, the hedge funds, the money laundering. Hey, the UK is the biggest money laundering country in the world. This is why your real estate prices haven't crashed yet. Because I just read today in the Financial Times, Stacey, that the average home, $2 million, is coming in from foreigners who come to Britain to launder their money. It's the money laundering capital of the world. The UK is becoming the world's valet. It basically is what it's good at. It just launders money there. That's what they do best. It's distorting the real estate market in the UK. So the average person in the UK, the fireman, the doctor, the nurse, the school teacher, can't afford housing. They're given money from the banks in these predatory lending schemes. So now they're negative equity when interest rates go up. And a certain percentage of those people, of course, are going to become violent. You know, in the 70s in America, we used to call it going postal. You know, in the middle class during the recession of the 1970s, when oil prices skyrocketed, interest rates skyrocketed due to the mismanagement of the U.S. economy by the greedy bankers and oil profiteers of that time, you had certain members of the population go nuts. They went postal. The middle class, they're working at the post office. Suddenly they're negative equity because the oil company and the governments and the corporations decide that they're not worth living anymore. Their lives aren't worth anything anymore. So they go crazy. Same thing.
They go postal like Al-Qaeda does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda is just an organized form of people going postal. You know, flash forward 30 years, 35 years. It's just the same phenomenon. The middle class is getting squeezed. Now, the biggest threat to the middle class and the rise of violence, which will ensue, is coming from this particular article I've seen.
An article is going to cause violence? Wow.
If you if you fold it up into a little paper airplane and attach a nebula of bubonic plague.
Oh, yeah.
And then fly it into some
glass house.
A glass house. Now, it says here that right here in The Economist.
Oh, yeah.
The Bible of the global economy. I read religiously every Friday, anxiously. Mm-hmm. It comes out, and I'm just waiting at the newsstand. I'm at the licking the window, waiting for The Economist to show up so I can gobble it all up. Mm-hmm. It says here, I burped.
Wow.
It says here on page 12, what's that hissing sound? America's house price bubble. It says here that some interesting statistics about the house prices in America collapsing, which now they're talking about a collapse in real estate prices. It's not a soft landing, but it's a hard landing.
I see on MarketWatch they're saying housing is in free fall.
Well, we've been talking about this for a while, that you had a situation in America where Alan Greenspan, whose job it is to, well, what's the classic definition of a Fed chairman? Take away the punch bowl when the party gets too rollicking. But he failed to take the punch bowl away in the 90s. In fact, he spiked the punch bowl with talk about so-called new economy, where you could have unlimited productivity without any inflation. And we had a new age. And then the NASDAQ collapsed, went from 5,000 down to 2,000. It was a $5 trillion wipeout. And that would have brought on a normal recession-like period in the U.S. economy, which would have given the economy a chance to breathe a little bit and rebuild the capital stock and maybe set the stage for a longer, pronounced period of growth. But instead, you had a massive bubble shift from NASDAQ to real estate bubble. And this real estate bubble is actually much bigger and much more dangerous than the NASDAQ bubble. And here's a couple of statistics which will give you an idea of how this all works. Over the past 5 years, the total value of American homes has increased by more than $9 trillion to $22 trillion. Remember, the entire GDP of America is something like $11 trillion. It's the biggest bubble in American history, according to The Economist magazine. And in the past, average nationwide house prices have experienced year-on-year declines for the odd isolated month, but they have never fallen on a sustained basis for a whole year, as they have done this past year since the 1930s. However, most states have seen house prices drop at some time in the past three decades. Since the housing market is looking bubbly in more states than ever before, prices could simultaneously fall in enough places to give America its first nationwide price decline since the Great Depression. On the surface, America's housing boom looks more modest than booms elsewhere. Since 1997, average prices have doubled compared with house prices in Britain that are up almost 200%. But Britain is a unique situation because it's the world's money laundering capital, and it's brought in all this Russian oligarch money. And, you know, guys like Abramovich and those Russian mobsters come in there and they dump billions of dollars and it distorts the housing market. And that's a special situation. But the economic consequences of a bust could be more severe because the economy has become so addicted to rising prices. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. The boom has lifted the economy in three ways, Stacy. It has boosted residential construction. It has made people feel wealthier and so encouraged them to spend more. And it has allowed homeowners to use their property as a gigantic cash machine, taking out money by borrowing against their capital gains. Merrill Lynch estimates that the three together accounted for more than half of America's GDP growth last year. Counting construction, finance, and estate agency, the housing boom has also been responsible for one-third of all jobs created since 2001. If house price rises level off, GDP growth could dip substantially in 2007. If prices fall, as we predict they will, expect a near depression conditions. So you've got half GDP wiped out with the falling real estate market and a third of all new jobs gone. So the unemployment rate goes from 4.7%, which is already understated because they don't count people who have stopped looking for work. It's actually 8.5%. So that number immediately goes to 16%. You've got then GDP going from plus 2.5% to negative 2%, 3%, 4%. And what's remarkable is that the Federal Reserve Bank in these circumstances has always been relied upon to lower interest rates. It used to be called the Greenspan put, but I guess you could call it the Bernanke put, in that, oh, well, ultimately, if there is a big crisis in the economy, the Federal Reserve can always lower interest rates and bail the economy out. The problem with that is that this housing bubble is collateralized by hundreds and times that $22 billion housing number. There's our $220 trillion worth of derivative products and collateralized debt obligations floating around the global economy that use as their collateral this $22 billion housing market, give or take a few billion, that is collapsing. So then you have a $220 trillion asset in this cash respectively melting, which is flooding the world with cash, which makes it impossible for the Federal Bank to lower interest rates without absolutely destroying the dollar completely. They would have to, the creditworthiness of the U.S. dollar would go from a AAA credit to a junk. So the Fed Reserve, even though inflation, which is what you call it, the situation when there's tons of money entering the system, even though there is so-called inflation, the Federal Reserve Bank would be forced to raise interest rates. And this is the worst of all both possible worlds, and it's really the bubonic plague of finance, you know, to bring this back to our 1400, 1500 period in history. And speaking of bubonic plague, Stacey, the plague is back in the news.
Yes. There were 13 cases of bubonic plague so far this year in America. There always are a few isolated cases of bubonic plague, but it's apparently growing. And scientists say that this is going to be an effect of global warming, that is that there will be more bubonic plague. But in terms of your housing story, there is another economist, Noriel Roubini, who is a professor of economics at NYU and was a senior economist in the White House and the Treasury Department in the late 90s. And he supports what the Economist is arguing about, that the housing collapse, he says it's actually in free fall, will bring the entire economy down with it. He says because consumers are also facing higher energy prices, higher interest rates, stagnant wages, negative savings, and high debt levels. He says, quote, this is the tipping point for the U.S. consumer, and the effects will be ugly. Expect the Great Recession of 2007 to be much nastier, deeper, and more protracted than the 2001 recession. Well, he says it's going to be, the effects will be ugly, but where one could argue that the effects will be good. They'll be pretty, in fact, because it'll, by less consumption by the American consumer. Remember, there are 5% of the world's population consuming 27, 28% of the world's energy resources. So you could see that the effects could be positive as you have less oil wars, less pollution, less global warming. At least it slows it down.
Yes, that is an upside to collapse of the American economy, is that the ecology benefits, because you're removing the most dangerous agent in ecological destruction, and that is the American and British consumer. And it looks like situation in Israel is going through a period of self-reflection as they try to sort out exactly how they could lose.
I know. I think America is doing the same, because apparently America was using this as a test case in order to invade Iran along with Lebanon.
Yeah.
You know, they, for some reason, the neocons thought that if they got rid of Hezbollah, that they would be able to go straight into Iran.
Meanwhile, Iran is looking, I think his popularity, the head of Iran, is above George Bush's around the world now these days.
Well, it is even on the forum boards in America, because you look at Ahmadinejad. This past week, he was interviewed by Mike Wallace, who's a U.S. Presenter, TV guy. And Ahmadinejad, I have to say, was much more articulate than the American president, much more relaxed.
Mm.
You know how Bush gets quite nervous in front of the cameras and becomes very inarticulate. I don't know if he's that inarticulate in private life. But, you know, Ahmadinejad came across as a leader of a country, whereas Bush sadly doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, sorry to pick on Israel and everything, but this is a story that kind of puts that in perspective. This guy, Dan Halutz.
Oh, yeah. The defense secretary.
Yeah, he's head of the Israeli Defense Force, reported by the Israeli newspaper Mariv to have instructed his investment manager on July 12 to sell his personal portfolio just as senior military and political figures were discussing the military response to the raid in which two soldiers were abducted. So basically, their Israeli Defense Force head was playing the market, was more important to him than saving the life of his citizens. So this is what it's about in Israel, and it's what it's about in Wall Street, and that's what it's about in the city, is that the bankers are concerned about their personal fortunes, and the citizens can die. They're collateral damage. You know, the people who died on the bus in London on last summer, that's collateral damage. Well, Goldman Sachs seeks to make outsized gains from global arbitrage games and financing and stoking wars and fear-mongering. That's just collateral damage. 9/11 was collateral damage for the bankers. The bankers working in those towers, let's face it, they're not like they're virgins, pure, innocent types. I mean, they contributed to the economic conditions that led to that event. So it's, nothing exists in a vacuum. There's always, if you want to see the truth about the markets, you have to really look at all the connections. And that's a very obvious connection that people in America don't want to look at, because it would mean that maybe they had something to do with that event, which would mean that maybe God is not on their side, which would mean maybe they are a secular society and not God's representatives on earth, which of course absolves them from any accountability at all as they go around committing ecological genocide and warmongering, fearmongering, and destroy the world's ecology, etc.
But Dan Halutz trading on the war information represents a new trend in insider trading, I think. It's really called deep inside trading, because how are you going to investigate him? How are you going to know what was said and planned in the war room at the time. What can you can't argue what he knew and didn't know at that time. He claims now that there were no plans at that moment to invade Lebanon. Mm. Remember, he sold within 3 hours of Hezbollah kidnapping the two Israeli soldiers, and they and he, including the cabinet of the Israeli government, were in the war room at the time. And he sold his shares. So how are we ever to know what was said there? Because, of course, they'll claim that it's national defense, national security, that he can't reveal or divulge what was said in the war room.
Hmm. Yeah. And that's a new that's a law that they're tinkering with here in the U.S., that corporations can simply fail to disclose insider trading for the cause of security and national defense.
Exactly. So every time the threat alert is raised to orange or red, that's probably going to be used now as an insider trading opportunity. Whenever that goes up, look at the markets and you'll see big selling going on, probably.
Absolutely. They're definitely hooked. Washington and Wall Street are just fusing into one insider trading scandal. It's beyond fascism.
Because
it's fascism on steroids.
Yeah, and they'll use the threat alert as a way to immunize themselves from investigation.
Exactly. Say, all the trading during that red alert, you can't investigate for national security.
Exactly.
So anytime they need to make a few extra bucks for the Christmas bonus, they raise the alert to red.
And remember, George Bush this year in March gave executive authority to John Negroponte that he is allowed to dismiss any lawsuits or SEC investigations against any corporation that he determines would impact negatively upon national security.
Well, I mean, I told you the story that John Poindexter contacted me directly about creating the policy analysis market, which was a virtual market for trying to predict where terrorists would strike. And the message we got was that he's trying to use that to trade stocks. He's not interested in the security. John Poindexter wasn't interested in the security of the people. He's interested in how to get an edge on insider trading. So he wanted to use the algorithms and the technology I had invented, the virtual specialist technology, to enhance his insider trading. And this is when it set up a bit of a conflict between myself and those who are seeking to destroy humanity for a few bucks. But the other thing is to consider is the backdating option scandal. Because here again, because of these events that are engineered by the insiders, like a 9/11 or a 7/7, when the market crashes, then it recovers due to the inflow of cash generated by the bankers who are taking tax money and using it to buy stocks in a way that helps the insiders and depletes capital from the general population. There is a rise in the stock price. And then what these executives have been caught doing now is that they go back in time and they say, well, back when the stock was low, we're going to say that we awarded ourselves stock options based on that price. And now that the stock is high, we're going to cash out those options. So we manufactured more profits for ourselves with no risk by going backwards in time. They claim that they're able to go backwards in time and award themselves stock options at a date when no stock options existed. And you've got 200 active investigations and 2,000 informal investigations, and there's only about 2,500 companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange. So virtually, 85%, 90% of all companies in America are under investigation for ripping people off by claiming that they can go backwards in time and give themselves stock options based on depressed stock prices that occur after events like 9/11 that they themselves engineer. So once again, it's just a case of insider trading and market manipulation. That's the truth about markets. This is Resonance 104.4. I'm Max. I'm with Stacey. We're here every Saturday deconstructing, analyzing, dissecting, laying out for you the breadcrumbs from your vague understanding of how you're getting ripped off to the gingerbread house of reality. Yes, you are getting ripped off. Your middle-class life is being threatened. And yes, there is a global insurrection against corporate occupation. And yes, the events that we see in Lebanon and elsewhere are the armed wing of the middle class fighting back. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Before I move on to a story about here in Britain, where the about insider trading and accounting irregularities, I just want to quickly note something that I saw in the Wall Street Journal that, you know, there's a mini boom going on in tech stocks. Well, apparently, as of Friday, there was a record number of short sales on the NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm.
Just so people know, that's kind of, it's only in the Wall Street Journal that's reporting that. And that's kind of like an insider trading manual or guide to the insiders, how they're moving, where they're putting their money.
Absolutely. Wall Street Journal carries stories about insider trading every single day, if you care to look at it. And you're right. The short ratio on the NASDAQ is hitting all kinds of new highs as the insiders are making negative bets against this so-called rally in there. The story came out last week that Dick Cheney, the vice president of the United States, has his assets invested outside of the America and outside of the U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking a position against America,
yeah.
Dick Cheney, while he's out there on the stump talking about, well, America's great. We need to go invade Iran. He himself is invested outside of America and outside of the U.S. dollar. So it's insider trading. Of course, if he invades Iran, the U.S. economy is going to collapse. And Dick Cheney's going to make a lot of money. He's betting against America. It's the classic painting tape technique that goes all the way back to, you know, the 1920s. Painting the tape, where you have a position, you're short a stock, you're making a negative bet, and then you release a story in the press saying how great the stock is. It's pump and dump. Dick Cheney is the biggest pump and dumper in the history of America. It's bigger than the movie Boiler Room. It's bigger than any pump and dump scam that we've heard about so far. He's out there selling America short while he's trying to hype the benefits of invading Iran, because he knows that once that happens, the American economy is going to crash, and he's going to make out like a bandit again after making out like a bandit already in a war profiteering business with Halliburton, after setting up all of his cronies with no-bid contracts in Iraq and New Orleans. The guy is a total menace, him and his wife there, who attacks intellectual property rights, Lynn Cheney. You know, Eminem was right about her. I forget what he said in his song about Lynn Cheney, something like she's... I don't think I can repeat it on this family show, pre-Watershed.
I have a theory about Dick Cheney, is that there's no way this guy should be alive, right? Because he's had...
What?
That sounds very
inflammatory.
No,
Are you promoting violent hate speech?
No, let me finish, because I'm saying that he's had so many heart attacks, right? And he's an angry, bitter guy, obviously. You just look at his face.
Yeah.
But I bet you anything, he has bought a Chinese dissident's heart. And he had his heart replaced with some Chinese dissident.
Because
mm-hmm. there's no other... It just doesn't make sense that this man survives all these heart attacks.
Mm. You know what I heard?
What did you hear?
I heard that he kept having heart attacks, so they just took it out.
So he has no heart at all.
He has no heart.
Wow.
It's just an enlarged lung.
Well, that makes sense, because we always do point out that Rupert Murdoch is the Wizard of Oz. And I guess Dick Cheney would then be the Tin Man.
He's the Tin Man. Is the Tin Man missing the heart? I think
yeah.
he's missing. I think the lion, the Cowardly Lion, is missing the heart.
No, he's not. It's the Tin Man, obviously.
Who's missing the brain?
The Scarecrow is missing his brain.
That's right. Scarecrow is missing his brain. The Tin Man is missing his heart, and then the lion is missing his courage.
Yeah.
You know, the Wizard of Oz is actually a parable about the gold standard.
Exactly.
And going off the gold standard is what the original story focuses on. Dorothy is on the yellow brick road toward a gold standard, which is the Emerald City. Once you get off the gold standard is when problems ensue.
The Wizard of Oz is like the fiat guy, isn't he?
He's the fiat currency man. He's Ben Bernanke. There's also this funny thing about that story. I'm sure residents, listeners already know this one. You can't surprise them with this one, but apparently if you play the movie Wizard of Oz, turn the sound down and play that Pink Floyd record, Dark Side of the Moon, that the album is the exact same length as the movie, and as scenes in the movie unfold, there's like an orchestration on that record that coincides with what's happening in the movie. I think BBC last year actually did this. They played The Wizard of Oz with that soundtrack at the same time.
I've never heard of that.
I'm sure Residents FM 104 listeners know all about that. There's probably some of them right now doing this exact experiment their Afghani hash that they got in cheap thanks to Tony Blair's failed war on drugs. So they've got the best heroin crop yet in decades with the Pink Floyd and The Wizard of Oz. It's Saturday night in London, of course. Go outside at midnight, vomit a little bit, drink your weight in tequila, go back to your house, smoke a bong, rock on, dude. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. But how about Sir Digby Jones? I'm sure you recall him from when he was the head of the CBI, the Confederation of British Industry. He was
Before we get into Digby, can I want to just, before we leave this insider trading market manipulation thing.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, the thing is, you know, what we're saying is that those in power are causing these problems to make money, to make market gains. I'll give you a very, very clear example of this. There's a site called Headstreet.com, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and they just started trading hurricane contracts that for as little as $100, you can make a bet that hurricanes are going to cause huge devastation around the world this year. So, I mean, this is now for the little guy is now able to do what the big guy is doing, which is continue to drive your SUV, continue to put CO2 into the atmosphere, continue to buy all those plastic bags, continue to destroy the ecology in the short term, make a bet that there's going to be more hurricanes because of what you're doing, and profit from your own destruction. And you can do that on headstreet.com right now. It's not different than what Goldman Sachs is doing, except they're, instead of using $100, they're using $100 billion. They're doing the exact same thing. We're promoting the destruction of the globe, and we make money doing so in the very short term. There won't be a globe in 20 or 30 years, of course. Your children are completely screwed, and anyone born today can sue their parents with wrongful birth as a huge growth industry around the world because you're giving birth to children with less than one lifetime's worth of ecological resources. That's a great wrongful birth lawsuit. And I predict, as I've said on the show, that within a couple of years, wrongful birth insurance is going to be a big business as parents spend $20-$30 a month to protect themselves against having their kids sue them for wrongful birth because the parents have contributed to this ecological devastation. And of course, those who say that they're working for the ecology, like David Cameron or Bob Geldof or Bono, when you examine what they actually do for a living, they support these corporations in ways that completely negate their words. So then it's the worst slime of all. Those who say they're doing something but are actually working for the other side. At least the people like and these other schmatas have the integrity to just not even pretend to be doing good. They say we're ugly market manipulating fools, and we don't care. But in the case of Bono and Cameron and Geldof, they pretend like they care. I think that's even worse. I think they do more damage because people have the belief that somebody's out there standing up for them when they're not. So you're left on your own to rot. Get an ASBO up your schwing-schwing from Dave Cameron on his bicycle riding around Mayfair giving out ASBOs to anyone who's not white, who stumbles into that neighborhood drunk on a Saturday night after listening to this show. They go get drunk. They go, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to blow my brains out. They get drunk. They wander into Mayfair, and there's David Cameron on his bicycle giving him an ASBO.
David Cameron sending out ASBOs?
That's right. It's his new initiative. He's going to clean up this town. Forget Ken Livingston. Ken Livingston, he doesn't have the courage to get on his bicycle and ride around giving people ASBOs in person.
Yeah, and then Dave Cameron, of course, gives you a hug after he's given you an ASBO.
Yeah, gives you a big hug. I love you, hoodie.
I feel
you're a hoodie. I feel your pain.
It hurts me more than it hurts you to have to give you this ASBO.
All right, so what's happening with this guy? What's his name?
Well, this is talking about market manipulation. Digby Jones.
Digby Jones.
Sounds like a character out of a 1970s film.
It sounds like a character out of a movie made by the once great film director, now Mr. Madonna. What's his name?
Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a testament to how bad this guy is doing that we can't even remember his name. Guy Ritchie once made a good movie. Okay, it was a little bit like Quentin Tarantino, but at least he showed some flair. Now he's there, you know, doing what? Waking up in between Madonna's breasts every morning, wondering, what the hell did I do? How did I get here? Where's the camera? What happened to my career?
Well, Sir Digby Jones, who until recently was Director General of the Confederation of British Industry, the voice of British business, that very man who was often meeting privately with Tony Blair to determine UK policy, well, he was last night enmeshed in the worsening controversy over the government's £6.2 billion effort to overhaul the NHS computer system.
Oh, yeah.
iSoft, the troubled software company at the heart of the massive project, yesterday said it had racked up losses of £344 million last year as it counted the cost of what it described as a turbulent 12 months. Mm. The company is under investigation for accounting irregularities. Well, apparently these accounting issues, now under the microscope, took place while Sir Digby Jones was the non-executive director in 2004 to 2005, and he was also served on its audit and remuneration committees.
Mm-hmm.
So he was looking over. He was responsible for the audit of the company.
Rape the economy. Digby Jones is your friend.
Yep. And when Sir Digby was questioned.
Sir Digby, of course.
Exactly.
He gets a big sir for that, buddy. You stick your ding ding in the schlong schlong and now it doesn't work no more. We'll give you a nice knighthood. Sir Digby. Sir Deadbeat, they should call him.
And when he was questioned during a Guardian newspaper inquiry into ISOF's accounting practices in August 2004, when he was responsible for the audit and remuneration committees, he said he had thoroughly investigated allegations put by the newspaper. And Sir Digby made his name campaigning for high standards in corporate governance.
Oh, yeah, like David Cameron is doing.
Yeah, well, but this is like the constant Orwellian sort of theme that runs throughout our politics and economics these days. It's like whoever is shouting the loudest about corporate governance tends to end up being the one that's ripping you off the most.
Yeah, of course. I mean, America's becoming fascist. So what do they call the Islamic bad guys now? Islamo-fascists.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Because they're trying to neutralize that word. Because that's who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, we're corporate irresponsible jihadists for corporate irresponsibility. So I think, well, in the name of corporate responsibility, we're going to rip everybody off in the NHS and destroy it. You know, we got to burn the village to save the village. We got to kill these people in Africa to bring them, you know what they used to say during the colonial period. We're going to save them. We're going to bring them human rights by killing them. Or in the UK now, Tony Blair says, oh, in the name of choice, we're going to destroy your economy and destroy your education system and destroy your transportation system and destroy everything that you've spent your tax dollars on for years building. We're going to destroy it in the name of choice. It's a bit of choice. You get to be your choice. I'm going to be in Connaught Square paying a big mortgage and Cherie's off pimping herself out to give lectures about how badly I've screwed up the UK economy, but it's all about your choice. Well, I'll tell you, in 5 years' time, replace the word name Digby Jones with John Reed.
Oh, yeah. What's he doing now?
It's a revolving door. The people are in government. John Reed, he's up there like, talking a big game about this, that, and the other thing to get his name in the paper, to work on his resume. And within 5 years' time, he's going to be working in the private sector for some Goldman Sachs or some private equity group, ripping off people based on his insider information. Digby Jones is insider information. He goes to the private sector and he rips people off based on the insider information because he's a market manipulating fool.
He'll be Sir John Reed, of course, and he'll probably be working for somebody in the defense industry, BAE maybe.
Well, that's Carlisle. The tragic thing about this government in the UK and the US is that nobody's in government to serve the people. Everyone's in government to serve themselves. They get a nice line in their resume that they were in the number 10 Downing Street, and then they get a job at Goldman Sachs. I saw a story today about the similar situation. A couple of things jumped out at me. Okay, here's the front page of today's Financial Times. This is what I'm talking about. Here we got something here. The U.S. investment bank Goldman Sachs is planning to put its own money into the bid for the southwestern Japanese city of Fukuoka to host the 2016 Olympics. Goldman is advising the town on the commercial viability of hosting the games and said it was prepared to commit its own funds into infrastructure development and was confident the project would pay sizable returns. So, I mean, it used to be that these Olympic events would benefit the towns by the governments enhancing the infrastructure and that the population would get some benefit. But of course, no, the population gets nothing. The middle class gets nothing. Now, Goldman Sachs, the private equity group from New York, they're going to go to Japan and they're going to reap the benefit of having the Olympics being awarded to Japan. In a process, the Olympic Committee, which is highly, highly dubious at best, it is completely corrupt, as we it's just a largesse. It's another corporate welfare scheme. So the taxpayers are going to end up paying all the infrastructure over there in Japan, and all the upside is going to go to Goldman Sachs. Again, middle class gets screwed, and it leads to violence. I'm sorry, but that's what you're doing, Goldman Sachs. You're engineering violence. Similarly, right next door to this, next story, Ford Motor is in early talks with Jack Nasser, its former chief executive, about selling their luxury car brands, including Jaguar and Land Rover, to Mr. Nasser, who, by the way, is now part of the private equity group at J.P. Morgan. So here you have another situation. Jaguar is a carbon inefficient monstrosity that's killing people every day with its carbon emissions. They don't have to pay for the risks that they associate, that they perpetrate into the economy. It's not a word, is it? Whatever I just said.
Perpetrate.
And, of course, the taxpayer builds the roads, builds the infrastructure. The taxpayer built the wherewithal for the auto industry to exist. Jack Nasser goes over to Ford, pays himself a huge salary, drives the company into the ground. Ford Motor Company is at risk of going out of business. He's over there at the private equity group. They'll probably take the luxury brands private on the private equity group. Jack Nasser will pay himself another billions and billions of dollars. And the shareholders and the citizens are paying for this. They get none of the benefit. And it just constantly flows. It's a trickle-up economy. Forget the trickle-down economy. There's no trickle-down economy. That's another misnomer. Came out during the Reagan years. Oh, it's a trickle-down economy. If we lower taxes, the increased business activity is going to lift all boats by increasing the number of economic activity out there. It's not, it's nonsense. It's wealth and income gaps have gone up steadily since Reagan years. And you've got the trickle-up economy where the essential core assets of the taxpayer-built reality world have been carved out, replaced with debt. And these guys are all living in a parallel dimension, offshore, offshore banks, offshore money, Cayman Islands. And they're basically stoking these income gaps, and they're stoking the conflicts around the world that are embroiling the world in wars everywhere. In Africa, you know, thanks to the arms dealt by the arms dealers from the same private equity groups who have shares in this, these companies and serve on each other's boards. And there's a rising tide of violence because of these guys. It comes from the bankers, like and JP are the bad guys. That's the bottom line. They are the bad guys. It's not. If you want to have a discussion about why there's increased ecological devastation and wars around the world, and who are the good guys and who are the bad guys, you've got the taxpayers, which are desperately trying to keep from sliding into a feudal underclass, and you've got these bankers, and they are the bad guys. That's it. That's the bottom line. Now, I've had a standing invitation on this show for a year and a half. I've been doing this show for 3 years. I've challenged anyone to debate me on this point. No banker has stepped up because they know I'm right, and they don't want to expose themselves to the harsh light of reality, and they prefer to live in the shadows like cockroaches, stealing the crumbs from the global economy. And leaving, the violence that may ensue as somebody else's problem. So I continue to make that challenge. You know, if you're listening to me and you're a middle class person and you don't want to become violent, you don't want to join a violent group, then you need to take some action. And on that score, the easiest thing to do is for the global boycott of Coca-Cola with the purpose of eliminating a $100 billion company. And this is to show that the global jihadists, the Coca-Cola, that the middle class has some power. On this score, in India, they're making some huge gains. You know, we had this campaign in the UK. We were over there at the Ecologist magazine for a while with the campaign. Then they started advising the Tory party, and then David Cameron started talking about how Coca-Cola is a great company. So obviously, if you're an aristocrat and you live in Devon, you're not going to take a position against the hand that feeds you. You're not going to battle Coca-Cola, are you? So once again, it's up to you, the middle classes, the person that maybe doesn't have the inherited multi-$100 billion fortune. You've got to take a position for yourself. You've got to protect yourself because the people who say they're in it protecting you are actually laughing at you. Now, here is page 49. They're talking about Indian environmentalist has dented two of the world's glossiest brands. You know, this woman who put out this report talking about the pesticide levels in Coke being 27 times the so-called acceptable level is giving the company a serious black eye. Now, if the world wakes up to this and they simply stop drinking Coca-Cola, then Coke stock goes from 44 to zero, and that's a $100 billion windfall, a $100 billion windfall that can be harnessed using the same tools that they use to kill us. We can use those tools to harness cash, to spread that cash out in places like India that have been victimized by Coca-Cola using the Karma Bank methodology, which you can look up Karma Bank and figure and learn all about the methodology. I'm not going to go into the details right here, Stacey, because we've talked about it before. So this woman, she wrote the report, CSE? CSE.
CSE, that's the Center for Scientific Excellence or something like that.
Yeah. She put out this report. This is page 49. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but It shows basically, we're not just saying that the bankers are crooks and they're killing people and we need to cry about it. I'm saying that bankers are crooks and we need to put them out of business. And the way to do this is to take a company like Coke, which is highly vulnerable to a global boycott, put it out of business, take the stock down to zero. If you're worried about lost jobs, forget about it, because you're going to create more jobs. Because when Coke blows up, when Coke goes away, there's going to be 10 competitors taking his place. More jobs, better jobs. Do yourself a favor. Get rid of Coca-Cola. Then from Coke, once Coke's down, we move on. We can look at Starbucks. We can look at McDonald's. We can look at other companies. But take them in the order that they're most vulnerable. Coke's the most vulnerable right now. So why waste your time doing anything but Coke? And then the economy, the pendulum swings back into the hands of the people, where it should be, because we're the ones who are electing the officials. We're the one making the purchases that ends up feeding the CEO salaries of these crooks that end up then taking that position, merging with their political compadres, and gutting things like the transportation, education, and health services in the UK, and leaving the people worse off than they were at any time. So that's the point there.
All right, Max. So we watched Democracy Now! Yesterday, and there was an interesting piece at the end of the show about with Mark Weisbrot, and he was talking about the new relationship between Venezuela and China. This emergence of Venezuela as kind of a as the kind of sell side voice on the world stage, because China apparently and Russia are going to support Venezuela's bid to be part of the Security Council. Mm-hmm. So Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, will now, if he wins and all of Latin America wants him to be Venezuela to be part of the Security Council, Venezuela will have a voice as to whether or not America, if they're given UN sanction, you know, support to invade Iran,
right,
or to force Iran to actually suspend uranium enrichment. So it looks like the tide is turning in the favor of Venezuela. And this is part of the reason. The part of the reason is that America doesn't have control over their oil resources, over Venezuela anymore. So they don't have control over those resources, which means that they other companies, other countries, other ideas have been able to rise because America no longer has control over those oil resources. I just thought it was an interesting way to put into context why America would invade Iraq. It's not necessarily for the physical oil in the ground. It's for control over it, over who gets it, who derives the income and power from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the point that was made is the reason why Latin America is now enjoying a resurgence in influence and power is that they got rid of their IMF loans.
Exactly. Hugo Chavez paid off their IMF loans and issued them new loans to pay back to Venezuela instead.
Hugo Chavez is becoming the banker, the central banker of Latin America. So Bolivia is restructuring their economy, borrowing money from Hugo Chavez in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. And Argentina as well.
Right. And Hugo Chavez is not putting on the same kind of restrictions that you would find in the World Bank. Because in the World Bank and the IMF, of course, when they lend money to a country like Argentina, it comes with these strings attached. Like, oh, you have to have all of your basic utilities privatized and owned by U.S. corporations like Bechtel and Halliburton. Which has led to, in Bolivia, that situation where people were being put in prison for capturing rainwater because it was outside of the contract put in place by Sir Bechtel to control all of your water.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, the Latin America is saying we've had enough of this. And of course, as was pointed out in the show yesterday, the coup attempt that was supported by America to replace Chavez, he survived the coup attempt. He survived to install democracy in Venezuela. You know, if only Kennedy had survived in 1963. Too bad that coup succeeded.
Oh.
You know, we would have had a much more interesting country in America than one that's run by neo-feudalists who have contempt for the middle class.
Well, we wouldn't have a nation of schlubs because, remember, Kennedy, I guess, was the first of the inspirational sort of human beings who were assassinated. Then you had Martin Luther King Jr., Robert Kennedy Jr., Malcolm X, anybody who meant anything and could lead people or inspire the population to not just take it.
That's
they
right.
were quickly assassinated all during that time.
It's misdirection. Once they took Kennedy out, they could kill the black guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the nation was in such shock by Kennedy being assassinated that they were unable to really deal with the fact that Malcolm X and Martin Luther King were assassinated. Similarly, on 9/11, the target was number 7 World Trade Center, where they kept all the SEC records, which mm-hmm. was clearly a controlled demolition.
Yes, where they had all the records on Enron,
right.
Which might have shown the link between the Bush, well, George Bush himself and Enron.
That's right. Yeah. All those records were in number 7 World Trade Towers.
Yeah.
Now, no plane hit that building.
No.
But it fell down.
It
fell down by itself.
the first building in the history of the world to fall down from fire on its own.
That's right. So if you knock down, if you fly planes into the towers and they fall down, that's the misdirection. You don't see, what you don't notice is number 7 falling down with a controlled demolition.
Or it could just have been sheer good luck for Enron.
Well, I'm saying that the Kennedy assassination was misdirection for the Martin Luther King, Malcolm X assassinations.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was the stalking horse. It was a misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the black community in America never recovered, did they? Because now you've got like just this past week, the news coming out that in some school district in the South, I guess it was, the bus driver ordered black kids to the back of the bus.
Exactly.
To get and to leave the seats in the front of the bus available only for white kids.
Mm-hmm. And what did Bob Herbert also? He wrote a column in the Herald Tribune, the New York Times.
Oh, that's right. There's a new magazine coming out.
Oh, yeah.
In the U.S.
It's already out. It's on the newsstand.
That's right. There's a magazine now on the newsstand that Bob Herbert, who's a New York Times columnist, saw. It's called Felon. And it's a magazine. The demographic are black guys who are in and out of prison committing felonies.
Their log line is called Felon, the magazine for the felonious mainstream.
Right. And Bob Herbert, writing the New York Times, was shocked that the headline of the magazine would say things like, "This is for all you niggas and hoes out there."
Mm-hmm.
So once again, the black population is being re-enslaved. In a very obvious way. Also, there was that discussion a few weeks ago about how Madison Avenue was concerned that they keep using this recurring image of the black mammy from Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the
Aunt Jemima.
The Aunt Jemima character.
Yeah.
Who is in the big house, you know. She's doesn't have to be in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So they're concerned that they keep using this black mammy character. I mean, pretty soon Al Jolson's going to start singing in blackface. You know, what do they call in this country? Pollywog. The pollywogs, which are the blackface in America. You know, this is totally acceptable again in America. Pollywogs are acceptable in America again.
I don't know if it's pollywogs.
You don't think it's called a pollywog?
Pollywog is like a baby frog.
No, I think it's something like that. We'll look it up.
It's not pollywog, though. It's close to that.
But nevertheless, be that as it may, give or take the pollywogs scandal. The fact is that in the U.S., racism is... because, you know why? Because, you see, the thing is that in America, they vilified all Arabs, you see? And it's a very... You know, racism is a very blunt tool. When you start to vilify a ethnic group, it just spills over in ways... the unintended consequences. You know, you can't... It's not a very precise tool, just like these so-called smart bombs that Israel is dropping seemed only to kill civilians somehow. But, yeah. You know, this rise of anti-Arab sentiment in America is spilling over to anyone who's not blue-eyed and blonde-haired.
Yeah.
And you end up, anyone in America who's Hispanic or black is now being, you know, ridiculed. They're being marginalized. They're being told to sit in the back of the bus again. And they're being ridiculed on these television commercials as being stupid, step-and-fetch, black mammy, sassin, Aunt Jemima types. And where's the black community on this? Where's P. Diddy? P. Diddy has got a daily vlog where he's talking about how bad his breath is.
Here.
What is it?
It's gollywog.
Oh, gollywog.
Yeah.
Oh, I said pollywog.
Yes, you said pollywog. The gollywog is the least known of the major anti-black caricatures in the United States. Gollywogs are grotesque creatures with very dark, often jet black skin, large white rimmed eyes, red or white clown lips, and wild frizzy hair. Typically, it's a male dressed in a jacket, trousers, bow tie, and stand-up collar in a combination of red, white, and blue, and occasionally yellow colors. The gollywog image was popular in England, it says, and other European countries. Until quite recently in the UK, it was used to advertise a variety of items, including postcards, jam jars, paperweights, brooches, wallets, perfume bottles, wooden puzzles, etc.
Because after a while, people kind of forgot what the origin of it was, and it just became like another cartoon character. And then they said, wait a minute, this is deeply racist.
As Ferris State University, which is, I guess, a black university down in the South, they say that for the past 4 decades, Europeans have debated whether the gollywog is a lovable icon or a racist symbol.
All right.
So this seems to be what's happening in America, as you were just discussing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the proof would be in whether or not the black community has got any kind of economic traction in America. Since they don't, then I think we have to assume it's racism.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
if they're being told to step at the back of the bus, if blacks in America, like even it was 6 months ago, some poor black kid was dragged behind a car down there in the South mm-hmm. and killed mm-hmm. by white boys who did faced very minimal penalty. As I recall. So, and the black community is just lying down and taking it. You know, the Jim Crow laws are coming back, and you got the P. Diddy's and the Oprah Winfrey's, you know, sashaying about on the Champs-Élysées in Paris or down in Saint-Tropez on their yachts. They're not doing jack doodly for their fellow compadres. Because, you know why? Because they don't see themselves as black. Mm-hmm. I don't think P. Diddy sees himself as black. Just like those white guys who like to sing rap songs don't think they're black. They think rap is white. P. Diddy now thinks rap is white. This is the triumph of rap, is that it has become basically a creation of by and for white people. P. Diddy is a white man. Oprah Winfrey is a white woman. I am blacker than either of those two, as I've said before, because I have a soul. I've got heart. They don't. They're like Dick Cheney, heartless.
50 Cent lives in Connecticut, which is like the whitest state in all of America.
He had to have a penis diminishing operation to be more like a white man, 50 Cent.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, we only have a few moments left, but
is
I wanted
right?
to put into your mind, because we always talk about this armed wing of the middle class.
Yeah, baby. What's up with the armed wing of the middle class, y'all?
And you know this name, Al-Qaeda, it actually came from America. I think they were the first to apply it to Osama bin Laden's group.
Yeah.
And now Osama bin Laden's group has picked it up. But what is the name for the Columbine or the Oklahoma City, you know, Timothy McVeigh, sort of armed wing of the middle class? Why don't they have an overall name?
That's right. That's right. Why don't they have an overall name?
Don't you think we should give them some sort of name?
We got to come up with a name for them. So it's got to be like so you've got Columbine, the white kids with the murdering, you got the Timothy McVeighs. There's white insurrectionists in America, white jihadists in America, who are killing innocent people because they're frustrated because the Goldman Sachs is trying to kill them. We'll call them who's the now leading the Treasury Department in America? Hank Paulson.
Hank Paulson.
We'll call them Paulson's, Hank's kids. Like
Hank's
Jerry's kids.
Okay.
We'll call them Hank's kids. You know, Hank's kids, the Columbine murderers or the federal government building blower-uppers, they're Hank's kids. They should have a telethon at the end of the summer to help Hank's kids. Hanky's kids, or Mr. Hanky, how about that, from South Park? Isn't that the giant poop that bounces around and leaves poop stains everywhere? Mr. Hanky?
Mr. Hanky.
Mr. Hank Paulson? He's out there in the Treasury, wherever he poops along, dropping excess liquidity into the system, into the toilet bowl of the American economy.
And this is causing the armed wing of the middle class
to rise up, to get out a giant piece of toilet paper and to wipe Mr. Hank Paulson off their butt.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll succeed. Hopefully. Yeah, I don't know. Hank's kids. You can come up with a better name than that, I think.
I think we could probably come up with a better name. You know who will come up with a better name is, of course, our listeners, because the Brits are very good at coming up with these sort of gollywoggy type names.
Yeah, they love to. Yeah, whoever comes up with a name, we'll give them a prize. They can come on the show. Next time we're in London doing our show live, we will invite you on the show to be a guest of the show. If you come up with the name for the white version of Al-Qaeda in America, the Timothy McVeighs and the Columbine killers, they're rising up in sympathy with other disenfranchised, squeezed middle-class people around the world.
We are the Truth About Markets.
Stay tuned for exciting musical programs here on Resonance 104.4 FM, the best kept secret in London. What do they call themselves? The most eclectic music in the universe or something? The radio station on the edge of the edge of time. You know, they got rid of Pluto this past week.
Because it was dinky and distant.
That's right. They got rid of Pluto, but they're going to replace it with Resonance. Resonance is going to become the ninth planet in the solar system. What's the eighth planet? Neptune? Jupiter?
I think Neptune's out further. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, you can email us at karmabank@gmail.com, or you can leave us an audio message on 0207-193-5755.
What's the email address?
karmabank@gmail.com.
Oh, that's right.
And by the way, we also have, if you want to look back at our archives, we have a new site called thetruthaboutmarkets.wordpress.com.
That's really good, honey. I guess that's it for now. Bye, y'all.